From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, May 15th, 2017. And on this day, how some Maine lawyers are dealing with the fact that the money the state uses to pay for indigent legal defense has run out for the year. And we will look at where Medicaid money goes in Maine and who's likely to be the most affected by Republican cuts in funding. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
It's become a chronic problem in Maine. The state has once again fallen short on funds it allocates for court-appointed attorneys who represent low-income clients. This year, the money has dried up 2 months early. That means lawyers who've been selected to handle criminal defense, juvenile, child custody, and civil commitment cases won't get paid until the new fiscal year begins July 1st. And as Susan Sharon reports, some of those lawyers are thinking about the best way to respond.
This month, defense attorney Jim Hawanek of Lewiston is expecting to undertake what could be a three-week-long trial involving a Somali couple charged with welfare fraud. The state has designated 62 witnesses in the case. The defense has 24. And Hawanek says there are 264 exhibits, thousands of pages of documents. So it's going to be complicated and expensive.
This is a case that requires hundreds of hours of work. The state had to fly in 5 interpreters from Ohio and Minnesota at an enormous expense. It's going to cost well over $100,000 to litigate a case in which the state is alleging $75,000 worth of welfare fraud. And we're not getting paid for it, at least, you know, until after July 1st.
By we, Hawanek means the private court-appointed attorneys hired to represent the two defendants. They won't get paid for 2 months, but the judge, the prosecutor, the clerk, and all the other courtroom staff will be paid on time. Across Maine, dozens of lawyers for low-income clients are in the same boat. And for many, indigent work is a big part of their practice.
It's creating a lot of frustration to the point where, you know, people are actually talking about engaging in some sort of work stoppage, some sort of strike.
This is the longest stretch they've ever asked us to do, and it's just seems like it's pretty disrespectful for the work we do.
Jeffrey Pickering is an attorney from Holton who says he doesn't understand why the Maine legislature doesn't adequately fund the Maine Commission on Indigent Legal Services. The commission contracts with and oversees attorneys who provide representation for those who can't afford it. The budget for the current fiscal year is almost $3 million less than it was last year. And as the number of indigent clients continues to grow, Pickering says the situation is not only unfair, it's untenable.
We have a choice of either doing poor service for our clients by not showing up for court, which is one of the things we're considering, or just working for free. And we shouldn't have to be facing that choice.
Though he won't be paid for 2 months, Hawanek continues to work on other court-appointed cases. On Saturday morning, he stopped by the Androscoggin County Jail to visit with a client who's facing an upcoming sentencing for aggravated assault and domestic violence.
Hey, my man, how you doing?
As depressed as ever, but yeah. Maintaining.
In Maine, court-appointed lawyers are paid $60 an hour. It's not the most lucrative way to practice law, but Hawanek says it's rewarding and essential. In the landmark 1963 case, Gideon v. Wainwright, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states are required to provide counsel to indigent criminal defendants under the Sixth Amendment. Portland attorney Tina Netto says making that clear to lawmakers has proved difficult.
I mean, people have spoken to the legislature, they've written letters, they've talked to their representatives, and it seems like this problem isn't going away. It seems like it's getting worse.
For his part, Governor Paul LePage has criticized the Commission on Indigent Legal Services and its need for increased funding, calling it a work program for lawyers. Twice, he's proposed replacing the commission with an Office of the Public Defender that critics said was insufficient and that lawmakers rejected. Netto says she fears indigent funding has become a political issue, and Hawanek worries about what that means for his clients.
I think it's a little overbroad to call it a crisis, but certainly the system is really fraying, and I'm really concerned about the Sixth Amendment rights of poor people.
In other states, such as Missouri and Louisiana, lawsuits have been brought over inadequate public defender funding. Hawanek says he hopes that can be avoided here. Calls to the Democratic and Republican co-chairs of the legislature's Judiciary Committee were not returned by airtime. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And you're listening to Maine Public Radio. We have a new development in the case that attorney Jim Hawanek just referenced. A judge has dismissed 14 of 15 counts against one of the defendants charged with welfare fraud. The state's case against Abdi Hassan, which was supposed to begin this week, has now been postponed, pending a further ruling from the court. A.J. Higgins has details.
47-year-old Abdi Hassan was originally charged with 15 counts of welfare fraud by the state, but now all but one of the charges has been dismissed after Androscoggin Superior Court Justice Susan Oram determined that the Maine Attorney General's office had failed to disclose pertinent information in the case. In his motion to the court, Hassan's attorney, Jim Hawanek, argued that state health and human services workers may have fraudulently signed documents that were offered as evidence in the case. Justice Oram said in her dismissal order that the case had been pending far too long and that the new fraud disclosure arrived too late to allow the defense attorney enough time to prepare before trial. Hawanek said it was not clear to him when or if the trial against his client will move forward. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Under the Republican-backed health care plan passed by the U.S. House earlier this month, the federal Medicaid program would undergo a major overhaul. States would receive a fixed amount of money for the program versus the open-ended federal support they now get. Supporters of the American Health Care Act say that change would control spending and give states more flexibility, but opponents say it will result in cuts to care. Whose health is at stake with these changes? Patty White reports.
In terms of sheer numbers, low-income children and adults account for most of the people enrolled in Medicaid. But that's not where most of the program's costs go to. They go to people like Evan Klein of Fairfield.
Evan, let's see, loves music. He's my concert buddy. He's seen Miranda Lambert and Dierks Bentley and Toby Keith and the Dixie Chicks. He was a Make-A-Wish child in 2000.
Deborah Klein is Evan's mom. When Evan was born 26 years ago, he experienced birth trauma.
I had a very difficult labor and delivery with him, and he was deprived of oxygen anywhere between 5 to 8 minutes, which is quite a lot. And as a result, he has cerebral palsy.
That's Evan's umbrella diagnosis. He also has microcephaly and severe epilepsy. He breathes through a tracheostomy and eats through a feeding tube. He can't speak or move on his own except to smile or raise his hand to answer yes to a question. That's how he communicated to ultimately graduate from high school.
He requires one-on-one total care, 24/7, 365 days a year.
Nurses care for Evan during the week, which allows Deborah Klein to go to work. That care, long-term care, is provided by Medicaid. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, people with disabilities and seniors make up a minority of Medicaid enrollees, about a quarter. But their care accounts for the majority of the program's spending, 64%. The proposed changes to Medicaid under the GOP replacement bill threaten this kind of support, says Ann Woolison, a policy analyst at Maine Equal Justice Partners, because Medicaid would change to a per capita cap program or block grant, which would limit federal reimbursement.
It is probably the least understood and probably one of the most financially damaging to states.
Currently, the federal government has an open-ended commitment to chip in on state spending on Medicaid, no matter how it fluctuates. but the block grant, or per capita cap, would allocate a set amount of money, which Woolison says will leave states shortchanged.
Healthcare costs continue to grow. So if all of a sudden we're saying, we're only going to give you the amount for every person that we were paying you for the year 2016, which is what this new plan says, it means the state's going to have less money to provide services, necessary healthcare services, primarily to the elderly and disabled.
So most of the rooms in the facility are semi-private rooms, so that's two residents per room.
Lori Pomelo is the administrator for Russell Park Rehabilitation and Living Center in Lewiston. It's a 103-bed facility that provides skilled nursing, long-term, and residential care.
70% of our residents that live here, 70% of the 103 residents are paid for by the Medicaid program.
Medicaid is the primary payer for long-term care in the U.S., but Pomelo says the program's current reimbursements don't match the cost of care. She doesn't see how capping program spending will meet future needs as Maine's population ages and nursing home residents arrive much sicker now than in the past.
I mean, the state of Maine has already had some nursing facilities that closed because the rates of reimbursement from the Maine Care or Medicaid program, they didn't get the money that they needed to match what they were actually spending. And the reality of it is there is not even enough nursing home beds in the state right now to meet all of the need that's out there.
I am absolutely confident that we can apply fiscal discipline to effectively manage the program to better meet the needs of those on the program.
Maine Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Mary Mayhew says she supports converting Medicaid into a block grant program in particular because it gives states more flexibility in how to spend Medicaid dollars.
In the last few years, it has taken years to get requests approved through the federal government that have allowed us to advance innovative models of care.
And Mayhew says Medicaid would still have performance requirements to ensure accountability. A spokesman for Republican Representative Bruce Poliquin said in a written statement that the congressman also supports giving states more flexibility while protecting individuals with disabilities and the elderly. But Deborah Klain says even under the current system, where federal spending is open-ended, her son's care hasn't been protected. When he turned 21, the state determined that instead of Evan needing 24 hours of care a day, he only needed 4.
What it would really mean is his caregiver, me, would be functioning on 4 hours of sleep every day and having to assess his seizures, assess him medically, and administer medications in the right proportions, the right doses. That's dangerous.
Klain fought the state in Superior Court and won. Since then, she says, the state has tried 2 more times to reduce Evan's care. If Congress decides to change Medicaid so states get a fixed amount of money, she expects the battle for Evan's care will continue. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Monday, May 15th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.